Are you tired? Are you frequently in a state of fatigue? It might surprise you to learn that your cellular health begins to decline as early as 25 years of age. As you age, your cell membranes start to become like Swiss cheese. This cellular damage is the primary cause of biological aging. It could be the root of your fatigue. But there's a breakthrough supplement that's scientifically proven to repair and renew your body's cells. NT-Factor Lipids. NT-Factor lipids are identical to the phospholipids found in your cellular membranes. NT-Factor is the only solution proven and published in medical journals to repair those dead spots in the membranes. If you're older, it can give you back the vitality, focus, and cognitive function of people half your age. And if you're young, this is the tool to optimize your energy production. I've been using NT-Factor for years and prescribe it for my patients. Learn more about the NT-Factor line of nutritional formulas at your favorite health food store or online retailer, or to order direct, call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I find the subject fascinating, and I think you will too. I'm looking very much forward to talking to today's guest because today we're going to talk about something called VNS. VNS is vagal nerve therapy or vagal nerve stimulation. And it was back in 1855 that Walt Whitman wrote a series of poems in a series called Leaves of Grass. And the memorable meme from that is, I sing the body electric. Here we are 170 years later. And indeed, we are now channeling our ability through technology to sing the body electric. I know our guest, Dr. Peter Stotz, has heard this before. He's chief medical officer and co-founder of ElectroCore. It's a company that seeks to research and develop applications for vagal nerve stimulation. Dr. Stotz is, as I said, chief medical officer of ElectroCore. He was the founder of the Division of Pain Medicine at Johns Hopkins University. So that gives you a little bit of an intimation of the potential for VNS. He's written or co-edited 13 books and close to 500 articles, abstracts, monographs, and book chapters on pain medicine. His work has also been highlighted on Good Morning America, CBS Evening News, Newsweek, and CNN. He's lectured extensively in this country and internationally and received numerous awards, and his accolades are too many to mention without expending half of the time allotted to this podcast. So without further ado, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Stotz.
Dr. Hoffman, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks so much.
It's my great pleasure. So, you know, I went to medical school and, you know, we had, we had sort of lightning rounds through all the systems of the body. And in neurology, we learned about the cranial nerves. The vagus nerve is one of the cranial nerves, but I have to say I haven't the vaguest idea what it does. No, I do know a little bit about the vagus nerve, but I think we need to explain what it is so we can lay the foundations for this discussion. So take it away.
Yeah, I love that. You know, and first let me start by saying I love your quote. I'm going to supplement your quote with a quote from Albert Einstein. Mm-hmm. Albert Einstein, 1934, gave an address in Pittsburgh where he said, the future of medicine is the future of frequencies.
Wow.
And what he was talking about was our ability to use electricity to modify disease. And the future physician will be an expert in both the chemistry as well as the physical side of medicine. I think we've spent, you know, frankly, between 1934 and almost today talking about the chemical side of medicine. But we are really tuning in now more recently, and I'll say over the last 20 years, on how to use electricity to really modify disease. It's really fascinating that, you know, in many of the areas that we're trying to treat people today, the most effective things that we have are electrical, not chemical. We can treat people with severe spinal pain problems with spinal cord stimulators. If you have urinary insufficiency, that people eventually will try medications, but eventually a sacral nerve stimulator.
It's like a pacemaker for the bladder in a way, right?
Exactly, exactly. And my point here is that electrical medicine is finally coming to its forefront, and people are going to start realizing that we don't have to throw drugs at people, but we can use electricity to cure, in many cases, diseases in the electrical chemical being that we are. So I think it's important to set that as a platform for us to think about things. It's not just chemical, it's electrical. Then back to your question, I'm sorry for my divergence there, but the nervous system is broken up into two major components, what we call the somatic nervous system and the autonomic nervous system. The somatic nervous system is what we think about when we walk and we talk and we want to interact with the world around us. But the autonomic nervous system is that nervous system that controls the world within us. And I break it down into two main components. Originally, there were three that by John Langley, but I'm going to really talk about two. The sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight. It's what you need to run away from that bear if it's chasing you. And teleologically, that was very important for us, but it's metabolically extraordinarily inefficient. The parasympathetic nervous system allows us to relax, recover, and rest. And that needs to be in balance. The main component of the parasympathetic nervous system is the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve does an incredible amount, and we can get into that. But this is what allows us to be metabolically efficient. In a world where we're always under stress, whether from our boss calling and yelling at us, or we're watching things on TV, or we never get rid of our cell phones, and we're always worried about something, of a girlfriend, of a boyfriend, etc., we need to figure out how to rest, relax, and recover. We don't do that well enough. The vagus and vagus nerve stimulation can help us get back into a reparative state.
So it's a reset. And is it fair to say that the circumstances of modern society militate towards arousal and a constant state of alertness and fight or flight response, the sympathetic dominant pattern? And that in principle, it would be good for us to reset our autonomic nervous system to help fortify the parasympathetic. And they're traditional ancient techniques for doing that. I think yoga does this, certain breathing techniques have done this, meditation has been shown to, you know, you can monitor the tone of the nervous system. You can see that you can take away the sympathetic impulses and you can support the parasympathetic.
Yeah, no, you're entirely correct. And I think we're just now realizing how important and how wise some of our elders were in telling us to meditate. And I say elders, I'm referring back to 2000 years ago with Chinese medicine, to meditate and to get into that rest, relax, and recover state. Because we're just now learning that having an unabated, uncontrolled sympathetic activity leads to a variety of different diseases, and for a variety of reasons. But we see a correlation with an increase in certain types of cancer with a sympathetic state, which is characterized by a low heart rate variability, something we can get into.
Mm-hmm. We just last week did an entire podcast on the subject of HRV, heart rate variability. So it's not an entirely novel concept to our faithful listeners, but it is actually one of the ways that one can pinpoint, shall we say, parasympathetic tone, and will tell us about the state of our nervous system in a non-invasive way, because we now have devices we can use, the Apple Watch or the Garmin or a chest strap to help ascertain that. It used to be a technique where we'd have to go into a laboratory and, you know, be fitted with an EKG and some suitcase-sized computer to do that. Now, with miniaturization, we can figure that out.
That's entirely correct. And, you know, it's really, when you think about it, it's only been about 10 years that we've had technology to externally stimulate the vagus nerve, thus having an ability to do a controlled trial of sorts, and similarly, to be able to widely assess its effect with either blood chemistries or heart rate variability monitors. It's really been relatively recent. So I think what's partly so interesting about this is that while the science is ancient and our understanding in some way of the importance of the vagus and the very importance of meditation has been historical, it's really 6 or 7 or 8 years that we've been actually able to intervene in the system and test it. And that's why you see an explosion in the media about this topic. I gave a talk the other day at the Institute for Functional Medicine, I think it was. And I looked up the number of hits on Google, and there's 42 million hits on Google on the vagus nerve in a third of a second now. People are extraordinarily interested in this.
What's interesting is that one of the historical antecedents to this is what's called auricular acupuncture. And this is something that I studied while in medical school. I took an elective in traditional Chinese medicine. And they actually put little pins in a region of the ear called Shen Men. And now modern science tells us that that actually communicates with the vagus nerve. And another thing I did in medical school, way back when, there was a drug detox program at Lincoln Hospital, which is in the belly of the beast in Harlem, where there was a lot of drug addiction. And you had drug addicts come in voluntarily for daily acupuncture, ear acupuncture, auricular acupuncture, to help reduce the craving. And so there was an understanding that this is, you know, perhaps not understanding all the physiology that now has been worked out, that this was a gateway to the vagus nerve to help have a calming effect, to reduce craving, and to induce a state of relaxation.
You know, really important topics there. There's a small branch that comes off the vagus nerve right in the upper portion of the neck, actually goes back into the skull and then comes out again at the tragus. And the tragus is a little portion of that ear. You say Shen Men, I say tragus.
It's a little triangle. Yeah, it's a little triangle.
Yeah, it's a little area of the ear that has a small branch of the vagus. And it's fascinating. There's about 960 fibers or thereabouts that make it to the ear. And all of those fibers are afferent fibers going back into the brainstem. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, roughly 1,000 fibers that go back in. And we're now actually using that in some, there's actually an FDA-approved product out there to stimulate that little branch of the vagus nerve to treat symptoms of addiction. So it's building just on what you said. It's the original acupuncture, and the use of acupuncture for addiction is now being done a little bit more scientifically, shall we say, with electricity. And then, so there's different ways of stimulating the vagus. You mentioned, I'll say entirely naturally. You can do it with meditation, with yoga, with deep breathing. Some of your listeners have heard about cold water immersion.
Yes.
Where they put their face into cold water, and that's activating the vagus. These are all strategies that are natural that can be done. Working our way up to the ear approach is something that's relatively easy because the nerve is so superficial there. The downside of that is there's only afferent fibers, only fibers going in. One can stimulate non-invasively. The work that I've been doing has been stimulating non-invasively in the neck to stimulate both the afferent fibers and the efferent fibers, those that are going into the brainstem and those going out to control the body's organs' functions. And then lastly, one can surgically implant an electrode. And you were talking about some of the history. It actually was 1988. They started to do the first implants for epilepsy. In 1997, got our first FDA approval for epilepsy with an implanted device. So again, it's a relatively recent modern history, but an extraordinarily ancient ancient history, so to speak.
Indeed. I've browsed the website of the company that you have co-founded, ElectroCore, and it appears that you've developed a device which is an external stimulator that can be used for self-care. It doesn't have to be used necessarily with medical supervision. Maybe a health practitioner has to introduce a patient or familiarize them with the use, but it's a consumer device. It's called the True Vaga, TRUVAGA. And I've begun to recommend this for some of my patients who suffer from, say, migraine headaches and other problems. The effects of the vagus are so universal that it really suggests that there's a plethora of applications. So let's describe the device and what it's like, what it entails to use the device, with some considerations in how you developed it. Because for all the world, it looks like those things that spies use to neutralize their assailants. You know, it's the kind of thing that you apply to the apply to the neck, and you immediately the person, falls to the floor and later wakes up tied up in the villain's hideout. Obviously it's not delivering an electric shock that's like a neutralizing shock, right?
Yeah, it's an activating shock. So what we're trying to do with this little device is activate your body's rest, relax, and recover nerves, which is the vagus nerve. And it is, part of the secret sauce here is it's a 5,000 hertz sine wave bursted every 25 hertz. So that's a lot of mumbo jumbo in there, but
so frequency matters.
Absolutely, frequency matters. And if you have the wrong frequency, it can stimulate the wrong fibers and the wrong nerves, and it can hurt. The device that we've created has a frequency that gets through the skin without really activating the pain fibers in the neck. You feel a sense of pulling, but it's not really painful. Like if you were to use a TENS unit or something that would actually get into the deep enough, it would actually hurt and could potentially cause problems.
Yeah, TENS units can cause muscle spasm and cause your muscles to quiver, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. And, the good news is we've established that this is safe. This frequency has been used on tens of thousands of patients over the years, and it doesn't activate the bradycardia response, making your heart down. It doesn't make your lungs collapse. In fact, when we got started with this whole thing, I was looking for a way to open up the lungs. My son had peanut allergies.
Wow.
And I was looking for a non-pharmacologic way to try to help open up the airways, because that's what kills people, as you know.
But that's the opposite. That's a sympathetic response, is it not? Because you use epinephrine for that.
Yeah, no, that's what's partly so interesting in this, is that we activated a fiber that has a branch that goes up to the brain, and then the brain creates a little link out to the lungs and then opens up the lung parenchyma and opens up the bronchial.
Wow.
And it could be blocked with a very potent sympathetic blocker.
Okay.
This is all kind of complicated, but you dove right into one of the things that we really had to spend a lot of time discovering was how does this all work? Because we do open up the lungs with this. So it's thing that not approved in the United States for asthma, but it's approved in Europe or was approved many years ago in Europe for airway reactivity.
It sounds like a little bit like the process of Edison inventing the light bulb. He tried all kinds of different filaments, hopefully not just trial and error, but guided by some scientific principles, but you had to tune it so you just got it right for universal application.
And that's exactly what we did. We tuned it with working on guinea pigs initially to try to figure out what the right frequency was. And interestingly, just, some of your listeners may be interested, is we undusted that full file of how we improved breathing when COVID hit.
Well,
COVID was, as you recall, in New York City, killing a lot of people up in the city for two reasons. It was causing a cytokine storm, and it was making it people couldn't ventilate or couldn't breathe.
Yep.
I undusted the file that we had done in humans and in animals and submitted that to the FDA with, of course, some of my colleagues at ElectroCore. And I think we got the first FDA emergency use authorization for a medical device for a treatment with that, because we showed that we could help people ventilate with
this. Wow, that's impressive, especially in that climate where, you know, anything but a pharmaceutical fix was considered a little bit, you know, woo-woo.
And we faced that. I submitted a request for two aspects of this. One was the ability to breathe, which we just talked about. But the other that we haven't talked about yet is the incredible power of the vagus nerve to dampen down inflammation. Mm-hmm. And it had been shown in some bacterial models that if you stimulate the vagus in a bacterial model, you can block inflammation and save an animal's life, so to speak. It was hypothetical at the time, but I suspected we could do the same thing with a viral infection as well. And we actually went off and did the study with my colleagues in Spain and showed that we could block the inflammatory response, the cytokine response, in patients with acute COVID who are being hospitalized for that. So we subsequently did another study looking at the same kind of issue here in the United States and found that we could block the production or normalize the production of IL-6, mm-hmm. one of the pro-inflammatory cytokines.
Which, by the way, is also now being investigated as a target for anti-aging drugs. So that's extraordinary, you know, universality of action. It sounds like, you know, what you're getting at is that this is a device that can address certain maladies. It can address, you know, we'll talk about this in subsequent part two. But it can help with movement disorders like in Parkinson's disease. It can help with gastrointestinal problems. It can help with headaches, migraines, cluster headaches. It can help with sleep and relaxation. But it also may be sort of a kind of a tonic thing that people can use as a, kind of a general optimizing tool.
Well, I think so for a variety of reasons. One, you may not have seen it yet, but just last week, the Department of Defense published a paper looking at our device in improvement in learning in our soldiers.
It's
amazing that you saw that already.
Yeah, it's a press release I just read it. Yeah,
but it's really kind of amazing. I'm sure you feel like. I feel like I wish I had that when I was in medical school because biology was a whole new language. But had I learned 25% more, who knows? You know, it's the fact that they've been able to show use of electricity can improve learning in healthy people is amazing to me. I mean, this was built on some history of work looking at patients with Alzheimer's who had an implanted vagus nerve stimulator. And they showed improvement in the decline that Alzheimer's were having. So, you know, I know we're going to talk more about maladies, but right now, you know, their work's been done to show improvement in mood, improvement in fatigue, improvement in sleep, improvement in anxiety, improvements in learning, improvement in error rates by the drone operators. There's a lot that's going on that shows that you and I could benefit from using something like this. In addition, I agree with you about concerns about inflammation and longevity. Mm-hmm. The vagus controls inflammation, and inflammation is associated with a number of different diseases. And we have shown pretty clearly that we can control or we can dampen back abnormal inflammation, shall I say. So that all points to an improvement for a wellness kind of approach.
Is it that it's a one-size-fits-all situation, or are there different frequencies that address different types of conditions? What have you found?
Well, that's an area of continued research that's going on. It's, one of the things that the NIH has been funding is a strategy for dissecting out the various fibers of the vagus nerve. Now, there's 160,000 fibers in the neck, and they're funding work to dissect out which fibers to understand which fibers go to the pancreas, which ones control diabetes, which ones control gastromotility, which one control Parkinson's. And I think that's a great scientific project, but it's a little bit misguided right now because all of the downstream effects are good. Mm-hmm. So if I'm helping you with your anxiety, right, your depression gets better, hey, you know, that's a good thing. I do suspect we are going to be tuning things more in the future. You know, mm-hmm, we're at the tip of the iceberg. We did a study, for example, in patients who had an acute stroke. Mm-hmm. So if you have an acute stroke and you catch it within 6 hours, mm-hmm, and you stimulate the vagus nerve, in this study that was done, run by the group at Harvard in the country of Turkey, they found that you can decrease the size of an evolving stroke dramatically.
Wow.
But the number of stimulations matter. So in that study, they did sham, low-dose stimulations, which was 7 2-minute stimulations, and then high-dose stimulations, which was 14 over a several-hour period. And they found that there was a significant improvement on the more that you stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
Not what we found in headache models and whatnot. So I suspect Parkinson's is going to be similar. We've found a frequency that works, but I think we're going to be tuning that to try to figure out more frequency, when do you use it, those types of things over the years to come.
So you have the principle, you have a tool, and it's just a question of dialing it in to specific circumstances, potentially. Yeah. But it doesn't hurt to use it as it is, because it's been deemed safe and effective for a variety of conditions, which we'll tackle in part two. I'm very anxious to hear about some of the applications of the Truvaga device. You can find out more at the website. The website is electrocore.com. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And our guest is Dr. Peter Staats. It's spelled S-T-A-A-T-S. I guess that's a Dutch name?
Yeah, Dutch by history, yeah.
Okay. So, however, you don't sound Dutch, it's your family name. but hence the pronunciation. All right. Great stuff, Dr. Staats. Stay tuned, because when we come back, we'll talk about specific applications. I think those of you who suffer from chronic headaches, if you suffer from sleep problems, some gastrointestinal disorders or pain conditions, even Parkinson's disease, you may want to listen up or refer a friend or a relative to this podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.